everyone. Dan Dillman here, bringing you another episode of It's a Little of This and a Little of That. Our first item of business today is to talk about something that's been with us for 2 years and is back again for a third straight year, and that's La Niña. La Niña just won't go away. Meteorologists say that for the third straight year, La Niña will persist throughout the winter in the Northern Hemisphere. And this is the first triple dip La Niña of the century, according to an update from the United Nations World Meteorological Organization. The La Niña climate pattern is a natural cycle. It's marked by cooler than average ocean water in the central Pacific Ocean. It is one of the main drivers of weather in the United States and around the world, especially during late fall, winter, and early spring. It's the opposite to the more well-known El Niño, which occurs when warmer water in the Pacific Ocean occurs, water that is warmer than average. Though this would be the first triple dip La Niña this century, it's not unprecedented for the pattern to last more than 9 months to a year, which is typical for a La Niña. And a typical La Niña in winter in the U.S. brings cold and snow to the Northwest and unusually dry conditions to most of the southern tier of the United States. The Southeast and Mid-Atlantic states also tend to see warmer than average temperatures during a La Niña winter. Meanwhile, New England and the upper Midwest into New York State tend to see colder than average temperatures. Well, that's not something we should look forward to, I think, but the World Meteorological Organization has said all naturally occurring climate events are now taking place in the context of human-induced climate change, which is increasing global temperatures. It's making extreme weather worse and influencing climate ahead of schedule. It's influencing also seasonal rainfall and temperature patterns, as we've all observed. It's what's going on in the United States this summer and early fall. It is exceptional to have three consecutive years with a La Niña event, according to meteorologists. But it will not halt, nor will it reverse the long-term warming trend. Both of these phenomena, La Niña and El Niño, are Spanish language terms. La Niña means little girl, and El Niño, little boy, or the Christ child. South American fishermen first noticed periods of unusually warm water in the Pacific Ocean in the 1600s. The National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration has told us. The full name they use for this phenomenon is El Niño de Navidad, because El Niño typically peaks around December. The entire natural climate cycle is officially known by climate scientists as the El Niño Southern Oscillation, or ENSO, E-N-S-O, a seesaw dance, if you will, of warmer and cooler seawater in the central Pacific Ocean. And during La Nina events, the trade winds are stronger than usual, and they push more warm water toward Asia, off the west coast of the Americas, upwelling of water from beneath occurs, and it brings cold, nutrient-rich water to the surface. So conditions do change drastically, and it looks like that we are going to have three straight years of the La Nina's influence. After we take a short break, I'll be back to talk a little bit more about climate change 2050. Climate change. Is it already the year 2050? This has been a summer of disasters, according to the New York Times. Punishing heat waves and historic floods are leaving absolutely no doubt that climate change is here. Nearly 6,000 temperature records have been broken in the U.S. during the last month, with severe heat waves punishing the Pacific Northwest, the Southern Plains, the South, and the Northeast. Floods battered St. Louis, which recently got 2 months worth of rain in the space of 6 hours, and a 1,000-year rainstorm also hit Illinois and another eastern Kentucky, where at least 37 people died in massive floods. Drought-plagued western states, meanwhile, are fighting over water cutbacks from the starkly depleted Colorado River, while wildfires rage in California. In Europe, temperatures over 100 degrees have killed more than 2,000 people in Spain and in Portugal, and another 1,000 people in the usually temperate United Kingdom. A few years ago, heat and storms this extreme were projected as a worst-case climate scenario for the year 2050. On the other hand, they have arrived as prophesied, but they are more than two decades early. The world is ill-prepared to handle our punishing new climate reality. Fierce heat, prolonged droughts, and extreme storms and floods will have a brutal effect on daily life, human health, the workforce, and transportation. It's already so hot outside that workers who must make their living outdoors every day often can't do their jobs for some days at a time, and this costs the economy billions of dollars. In the U.S., heat kills more people annually than any other extreme weather event, far more than tornadoes, floods, and hurricanes. In the coming years, the frequency and the severity of extreme heat events will only get worse. And we'll step away for just a moment or two, come back and talk to you about the extremists sent to fight in Ukraine. Oh, we're back now. Sorry to begin today with bad news, and I have to continue for a little longer with that and tell you about the extremists that are being sent to fight in Ukraine. Russia has lost tens of thousands of troops on the front lines in Ukraine. But the Kremlin doesn't want to risk a domestic outcry by calling up its reserves to replenish the ranks until now, until this week, as we found out. Instead, Moscow had been recruiting contract soldiers from the prison system and from far-right militias who are lured with higher than usual pay, excuse me. The defense ministry in Russia has been drawing on the networks of the Wagner Group. This is a paramilitary force led by an ally of Vladimir Putin that has become notorious for torturing and killing civilians in Africa. Wagner recruiters have now lowered their standards to supply cannon fodder for the Ukrainian conflict. Not even drug tests are carried out before duty. And the Russian military has also partnered with explicitly neo-Nazi militias based in St. Petersburg, which is Putin's hometown. Those include the Russian Imperial Legion. And this is an ultra-nationalist, white supremacist paramilitary group that the US lists as a terrorist organization. And another group is Rusich, which uses Nazi symbols and whose leader boasts of being a proud Nazi. Russia, of course, used the denazification of Ukraine as a pretext for its brutal invasion. But the accusation is completely unfounded. The real Nazis, it turns out, seem to be on the Russian side. Back in a moment or two, and then we'll have a much more pleasant subject, but an unfortunate one. Listen up, you Dodger baseball fans. I got some news for you. And if you haven't heard, your beloved broadcaster, Vin Scully, has passed away. Vin Scully narrated Dodger baseball for 67 years, beginning radio and TV broadcasts with a friendly invitation to pull up a chair. The dapper announcer began calling Brooklyn Dodger games back in 1950 when he was just 23 years old, and then he moved with the team to Los Angeles in 1958, where he remained in the booth, often alone, with no color commentator until 2016. Named by his peers the greatest sportscaster of all time, Scully could stretch a story across multiple innings, woven between balls and strikes, and fans stuck in LA traffic relied on his play-by-play, and many listened on transistor radios from their stadium seats. Scully was treasured for his vast knowledge, his honest analysis, and unexpected insights. Speaking of opposing players, he once said, Andre Dawson, you will remember, who was with the Cubs at one time, he said, Andre Dawson has a bruised knee and is listed as day to day. And then he added, aren't we all? Well, Scully placed his stamp on iconic moments like Sandy Koufax pitching a perfect game in 1965. There were 29,000 people in the ballpark and a million butterflies, Scully said. He called Hank Aaron's 1974 home run, that broke Babe Ruth's all-time record. He also called the 1988 game-winning World Series homer by Gimpy Kirk Gibson. He said, "I don't use the word fans ever, because to me it's short for fanatic," Scully said in 2016. "I always use friends because I think of them as friends, and people seem to think of me as a friend. And for that, I'm humbled by the thousands." Vin Scully, rest in peace. For that baseball game that you're broadcasting now. Did you know that this is the summer of lost luggage? As airlines cancel and delay thousands of flights, travelers are sharing lost luggage horror stories. Labor shortages are the root cause of this global fiasco, but there are a few ways to minimize the odds that your bags end up stranded in an airport storehouse halfway around the world. When checking in via kiosk, attach the tag to the bag's handle. Make sure to remove any old tags that may confuse scanners. Don't overstuff your suitcase, because big, heavy luggage tends to get stuck on the conveyor belts, as do bags with loose straps, for example, backpacks. And just in case, pack your valuables, essential medications, and a spare outfit in your carry-on, and consider putting a tracking device such as Apple AirTag in your checked bag. I hope those suggestions work out for you. And now, I'm going to tell you a bit about an innovation of the week, and that's a sea drone. A new underwater drone could help treasure hunters uncover sunken loot beneath the ocean floor, according to the company Florida startup Seafarer Exploration. It recently unveiled a prototype autonomous battery-powered vehicle designed to detect and to differentiate between various materials buried up to 10 meters, that's about 33 feet, beneath the seabed. The drone itself can descend to depths of 100 meters, and it emits electromagnetic, radio, and acoustic waves. A machine learning-based algorithm within it analyzes the manner in which any buried object is energized by those waves and can determine the depth at which those objects are buried and what type of metal they're made of. Wouldn't you like to have one of those instead of looking for coins on the beach? Well, with that said, I'm going to step back for just a moment before I bring you more of a little of this and a little of that. I thought I would bring today's program to an end. Well, the penultimate item, the last one, is the leap second too much trouble? Tech companies are hoping to eliminate a perplexing timekeeping headache that is called the leap Second, Google, Meta, Microsoft, and Amazon have all spoken out recently against a fascinatingly complex way that humans account for tiny changes in the Earth's rotation timing. Every few years, clocks are set to tick from 23 minutes, 59, 59, 2, 23 seconds, 59, 60, 2, and then 0, 0, 0. To keep them synced with the Earth's actual rotation. So the problem is that this can wreak havoc on the tech firm's global network of servers, which aren't used to processing a 61-second minute. The worst part, say the tech companies, is that a tiny speed up in the Earth's rotation could mean a negative leak second, something that the computers are not set up for. Sounds like a problem here. Stay tuned, and we'll keep you up to date on progress of that. And now, I think it's time for a little wit and wisdom. Quotations by famous people. It's very hard to find someone who's successful and dislikes what they do, except if they're a lawyer. Lots of people want to ride with you in the limo, but what you want is someone who will take the bus with you when the limo breaks down. So true. It's always a risk to speak to the press, Hubert Humphrey said. They're likely to report what you say. To be loving is to be open to grief, to be touched by sorrow, even sorrow that is unending. A happy arrangement is that many people prefer cats to other people, and many cats prefer people to other cats. And Carl Reiner said, if you're not in the obituary notices, go ahead and eat breakfast. And with that, I want to tell you a bit about several forthcoming programs. And that is, we have a program which is an interview with a person who is a Civil War expert, has studied it closely, and who has written a highly acclaimed book on the Civil War. And I've been fortunate enough to get this person to be on the program. Hopefully, the next program, and talk about Confederate generals, and also some of the most prominent Confederate politicians, many of whom we've never heard anything about, because obviously the winners write the history, and the Confederacy didn't come out on the winning side. So that's one of the interviews that we'll be having. Another, I'm going to be talking to a person who has a number of very interesting hobbies, a person who collects thousands of baseball cards, but on the other hand, is an expert on Native peoples, and he has even participated as a in some of the Lakota Sioux ceremonies. We can't tell you the secret portions of those ceremonies, but he does have a lot of really good information. Going to dispel some myths about Native Americans, as well as try to answer maybe 25 or so questions about Native peoples. And this man is now a devout fan of middle school, high school volleyball, because he was a coach for a time here in DeKalb. And he was also a school principal. So you see, we have some people coming up who are going to hold your interest. Please tune in. We want you to come back. Without you, we don't exist. And we'd love to have you here to entertain you, inform you, and make you smile once in a while. All right, Willie, take us home down the road again.